This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same. You could never understand.
The bicycle of life has two wheels, the past that you have already passed and the future that you are moving towards. The present is where you need to be, to pedal, to keep yourself stable, happy and successful. That's from Sirinath Mishra.
Well, we know where we're going.
Yes, on that road to future, that's your front wheel, the future, not the past. The past is your drive, your ambition, your goal to seek further fields. It's summertime, you're listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show here on 3CR. Podcasting, streaming, or listening on the old AWA wireless in the kitchen, 855 that is. Many thanks to Amy Goodman and Dr. Many thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! The View from America keeps coming. We've got a we've got an enlivening show, actually. We've got a bit of a data-driven show. We've got a look at, actually, how you can change advocacy from I feel this way to this is what it actually looks like. Reality always beats public relations every time. So joining us on that road from Crash Dash is Anthony. Good to see you back on the show.
Good to be back.
It's a long day. And Faith, good morning, Faith.
Good morning, Val.
And it is a wonderful summer's day, actually, after a bit of a summer weekend, which is good.
Yeah.
And now for that quintessential thing, I'll go first on the bike moment. I just love this time of year when suddenly you turn around or turn down the street and there's a jacaranda tree. The purple rain has started to fall already in Melbourne, which is good. And look, I should give a shout out to Critical Mass a couple of weeks ago. Apart from her getting wet, a little bit wet on the way home, it was a very successful 30th birthday. And good to see a couple of people I don't think I'd run into for 20 years. So it was a bit of, it was a bit of an old reunion. But good.
That's what birthdays are for.
It is, actually, and they even sang happy birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's all that.
Very old school. what about yourself, Faith? Been gliding past a trail lately?
Not as much as normal. Seem to have been stuck at a desk a lot lately, but I did have a nice ride. I took some of the Wheel Sisters for a ride just a little bit further down the Merri Creek than they'd been before.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know it, but there's one section, very low path, often floods, but there's a series of willows or peppercorns along the creek that creates this really sort of magical fairy dell corridor.
Yeah, yeah.
And on a warm day you come down into that and everyone stopped in awe and took photos, and that was a nice moment. when people discover some new parts of the creek.
That's cool.
It's not a competition, is it?
No, I don't know. I was thinking, how can I beat that? No, of course I wasn't. I had a couple of thoughts. One was I really wanted to go on the weekend to check out the new
Gibbs
Street, which I might do from here, actually. But I think what's springtime, this weather, what kind of mild mornings, the bike, because I live quite close to the capital city trail, and just the backlog on the when we're crossing over St. George's Road or things like it, wow, people come out.
People come out
this time of year, so it's really encouraging. And then I take photos of lines people queuing to cross on a bike.
I must admit, it is a wonderful thing. There are some of those streets that in Melbourne that say have got the lovely complete green street cover, and then you're behind the line of people. All
it's beautiful.
Nobody rushing. Everybody just commuting on their way. It is something special. And as you mentioned, Gibbs Street, we should tack towards a little bit of news. One is now, I haven't been down, so I avoided the weekend. I thought, it might be a bit crowded. And I'm like you, I actually did it. And the big news is the Footscray Road, the Green
the
Snake.
The Valleyway.
Yeah.
Mm. And my favourite part of the news with the Footscray Road one is earlier this year I was invited to a workshop for the naming of the Valleyway.
Oh. And, come from you?
And I suggested Iris Dixon, who some of our listeners may remember. Well, you'd have to have been a very long-term listener. In 2013, she was a guest on this show and was really excited 2 weeks ago when I was sworn to secrecy and heard that they had decided to go with the Dixon Valleyway. Yeah. So I think that's a very nice touch.
What's the background to her?
Iris is an Australian. She's in the Australian Cycling Hall of Fame.
Okay.
She raced in the 1940s and 50s. She had 16 Australian championships, 20-something Victorian.
Wow. Okay.
The only reason she didn't have world championships or Olympic wins is because women couldn't do either at the time.
Yeah.
She sort of retired for a while after having her second child, but came back in her 50s and had an incredible career then. When we met her in the early 2010s, she was riding every week with the Golden Oldies at Preston Velodrome in her 80s. And she died a couple of years ago at 91. So it's good
to
see.
That sounds like a great person to recognise as part of this. Well done.
Yeah. But it was also people in the team who then really championed it internally. So really, really nice to see. Her family were there at the opening. So great. Good to see it open. By all reports, a lot of people are pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
And so does that, it connects up with the other Valleyway that opened earlier in the
year.
Closer to the Docklands. Yeah.
Yeah. So you come off one if you're coming from Footscray to the city, if you wanted to go up Moonee Ponds, then go back over the other one.
And I guess the only thing, the connections that are missing, as Bike West have documented, are at the Footscray end. It can be quite difficult to get to it.
It's always a troubling spot. And the other thing about Iris, I mean, she didn't just stop at doing those rides. All her life then was dedicated to the local cycling club to keep people going. Am I correct in thinking Iris is the one that cast aspersions on my bicycle as we left the show one day?
You might be. Iris was besides being an incredible, tenacious and really determined athlete, was as smart as a whip and hilarious and not afraid to use it.
I had an old Malden Star family star. It was really, it was a shopping bike from the late 70s or something, chained down up the front. We walked out the front and Iris said, "Whose contraption is that?" It was very funny.
Yes.
I was quite offended, actually.
She ruled. The Golden Oldies met at Preston Velodrome every week to ride around it. There were people who, for whom, you know, riding on shared paths with dogs and children, was they no longer felt safe. So they would spend some time, an hour maybe, riding around, chatting, and then have morning tea at the velodrome. And Iris ruled that group with a...
Does it still happen? Does this group
No, she was
the leader in it. Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, since then, a few of them have died. And yeah.
Hey, listen, we're going to take this quick message, and then we'll be back quickly to talk about Crash Dash. Oh, sorry, I cannot find this, so we're going to keep going. Faith, why don't you just flip straight into
okay. Well, as we mentioned, we've got Anthony Eisenberg from Crowdspot, which is...
Or Crowdlab now.
Or Crowdlab. Yes.
Ooh.
So, again, long-term listeners might remember him in here a couple of times talking about BikeSpot.
That's right.
And, yeah, maybe you can tell us about the evolution from BikeSpot, Crowdlab and CrashDash.
So I was always sort of doing the work that I did under CrowdSpot, and BikeSpot was a project and Your Ground was another important project. But the underlying philosophy and value was always the same, reducing barriers to participation and collecting data in a way that's really useful for decision-making. And that theme has really come across into Crowdlab. So Crowdlab is now this umbrella. Crowdspot still exists. It's just a web tool for map-based data collection and projects. So it's a method of community engagement now. So Crowdlab I operate under, and there's Crowdspot as a web tool, BikeSpot as a project, and now CrashDash is the newly released platform. It's a couple of months old. And the purpose of it really, well, it's there's a few things going on there, but what was really important is that each state and territory releases crash data, which is based on police reportings. They release them at different times with different sort of standards of field entries. And so what I've done with CrashDash is bring it all together into a single map. So for advocates and planners and councillors and whoever, just local community members, they don't have to log in, they don't have to download a huge data set. They can jump onto CrashDash, filter by their local government area or by... go around their street neighborhood and just see what's taking place in their street. Something that was open data, it's publicly available, but not visible. Mm-hmm. So CrashDash is about bringing that, I guess, to the forefront of for everybody's accessibility. And so we can start to make decisions that are based on the data and the fact. And crash data across the country is a foundational data set that we can then build from.
It's, I know... As you know, in our local bug, we're often looking at the crash data from the Victorian government, it's public, but it's not easy to read. We're lucky; we do have a pedestrian advocate in our community who's very good at accessing it and will put it all together for us. And but yeah, this is bringing all that
exactly. And it's not just community members. I mean, bugs, they've got that one person. And if they don't have that one person, what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
It's similar in councils in a way. They might have a GIS person, which is Geographic Information Systems, that services the entire council, but they're under the pump. They're slammed, and so you don't need technical expertise to jump onto CrashDash. You don't need a login. It's just you jump in there, pick your state, and it's already visual, and you can just refine it quite easily and get a snapshot, whether it be by your street, you can filter by your street, or around your school, whatever the case is.
Or pedestrians or cyclists or...
Severity, so you can look at the fatalities in your local government area. Yeah. It's getting lots of interest in councillors. I met with even a Yarra councillor recently and met with other consultants and advocacy groups. So it's proving to be a useful resource and worth my time and continuing to build it out.
Yeah.
Why has it been so obstructed for... It's not deliberate, I assume. I mean, but nobody's really looked at it in an in-depth way, I presume.
Oh, I think sometimes bureaucracy hamstring... You know, the best of intentions are hamstrung by bureaucracy when you're dealing with multiple jurisdictions and their methods of doing things that have always been a certain way. It just comes potentially into the too hard basket. But
yeah.
Me as an individual or working with a small team, we don't have those restrictions and approvals processes and we can move faster. And I think that's where advocates and community members can fill gaps where government might should be doing this work.
Yeah. Because we've had a couple of guests on recently who have come to some of these things and obviously have a real skill for getting it together or designing things. Perhaps what I'm trying to get to is how do we get these... I presume there's no... not every state in Victoria or not every state in Australia reports at the same time or reports the same statistics.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and the method of extracting the data is varies widely. On the best level, Victorian... I mean, the bigger states that are more established have huge amounts of information in their crash data.
Yeah.
And you can access it via an API. You don't even need to handle the files.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, Northern Territory don't release any location-based crash data. It's just aggregated. So you've got this huge divergence in the quality and the frequency of this release of important data, which traffic engineers and road safety experts look at frequently. So it's road safety is something that everyone's in favour for, but why aren't we doing better to get the right insights in their hands to, so we can do more?
Can you give us an example of where somebody's used this to actually really make a difference? I mean, I can think of one or two in my local area, but yourself?
Oh, well, there was even within a couple of weeks after releasing, and I generally released it Victoria, New South Wales at the start and then rolled out each state progressively, and we now have the national data set there. But even a couple of weeks, Beck Roy, who's a local advocate and actually works at the City of Yarra, she was in touch with Patrick Hatch, sending him crash dash, saying, see, these are where the crashes are on Spencer and so, and she, you know, there was an article in the paper, and she was utilising that and sharing that around. So it's a couple of minutes, maybe a couple of clicks to visualise what's happening with crashes in a certain area.
Yeah.
And it's shareable. There's screenshots and you can share it to someone.
Yeah.
So encourage anyone to have a look, share it with your local councillors.
Yeah.
Share it with anyone that cares. And
that's so good because we've done that, sent data we've extracted to try to put it in an email, and then, you know, everyone wants to know the source. So you put the link to the Victorian crash stats and you know there's very few people who are going to dig down and verify that what you've told them is what is in there. It's difficult to read unless you know.
That's right, and that's why trust is so important in this space as well. So
it's
been a long time on performance, making sure it's really fast and accessible, but also that it's properly sourced in terms of when the data was accessed and the date range that that is being displayed at any given time. Because if we want people to, and people that are empowered to make decisions based off this, then they have to... It has to be super reliable and robust, so that's a lot of energy goes into that.
Yeah, and that's one thing understanding what is included, because that's another limitation and not one, obviously, that Crash Dash can address, but the crash statistics that are collected, certainly in Victoria, are only those that the police are called or you went to hospital.
Exactly.
So all those people who get doored but get up and keep riding or... all those sorts. It doesn't include every crash.
That's right. So even with the crash data visible and accessible, there are limitations. Yeah. I guess there are limitations with every data. It's kind of like saying, well, it's the best we got at the moment, but hopefully these differences and understandings at a deeper level with crash data, we can sort of come up with ways to even make it make it better, consistent across the country. It was even tricky for me. The publicly open available data set in Tasmania doesn't include a mode breakdown. So, okay, well, how can we plan around that? And in ACT as well. So there are ways to improve it in each state and territory.
They don't provide a difference between a motorcyclist or a passenger.
No, not currently in the initial method. And then I had to, just working with some consultants who were there down in Tassie and know the much deeper level of the ins and outs, they were able to direct me for a different source, but it was really hard to find. I couldn't find it myself.
Yeah.
So now it's only ACT and Northern Territory that are lacking in some of the data quality.
And so this becomes, on another level, another tool. You can compare the quality across states and maybe use that to encourage it to be improved and as you mentioned.
That's right. And so I did do some analysis around, what's the safest state based on number of crashes normalising it with the vehicles, kilometres travelled and population. Yep. And not surprisingly, ACT is at the top, big broad streets, low traffic. Yep. And you've got, I don't want to name and shame off the top of my head, but I think Victoria sort of sits in the middle.
Yep.
But likewise, you can see what proportion of crashes are made up of vulnerable road users, people walking, bike riding. And in Victoria, it's 17.6% of crashes are made up of people walking or bike riding or involved in a crash. Yeah. Nationally, that's 11%. Yeah. But when you think about that as a mode share of journey to work data, it's usually less than 3%. So there's a huge over-representation of crashes involving people walking or on bikes.
And it's probably true also that crashes involving vulnerable road users are more likely to be in that group that don't get reported.
That's right.
Because,
it also obviously has to, well, it has to be severe enough for the police to attend.
Mm.
Yeah.
If a bike or a person on a bike or person walking, if they're involved with a car, that usually it's going to be pretty serious unless it's in a low speed traffic zone. So there's a lot of perception data that crash data hasn't taken. That's why I guess where BikeSpot was trying to fill that gap, but also near misses as well.
Yeah.
Or the crashes that take place that are so minor where no police is being called to the location and you can put on a Band-Aid or ice pack at home.
How do we go about improving it? Have we got a method to do it, or?
It's a great question. I think it should be a focus for the federal government. There's a national road safety strategy, and there's a national road safety dashboard.
Yep.
And so this is really that remit to bring it all together. And I have reached out to them, to the federal secretary of the federal department responsible, and I've received a response, which is quite cool. So we'll see where that conversation goes. But for the states to do it themselves, it's hard, I think, has to come from the top.
Yeah. Hey, listen, in your looking at it, have you been surprised at one spot or one type of accident that it regularly occurs?
The patterns on locations is coming. I haven't done that so much, but there's... working towards a campaign early in the new year that'll identify sort of the top 10 crashes in either the whole of state or in some local governments that local governments can access as well. So, but if we're talking about the Yarra, I mean, what's really interesting, you can get a visual, you got to filter by your LGA or just by the city, and you can see the circles. They're like clusters of crashes where you have multiple crashes at the same location. Yep. So there's an instant visual. Then you can switch it into a heat map, which takes into account the quantity of the crashes and the severity in that heat. So you get these initial, but obviously, well, not obviously, there seems to be clusters around the state arterial roads and particularly at intersections. So they're the, and that's a common story, which was evident in
BikeSpot. That's certainly true in Maryback.
The
state arterials that...
Yeah, state arterials at intersections, it's the conflict points and it's... And I can tell you that Friday at 3 p.m. is the most common crash day. Well, Friday is the most common crash day, and 3 p.m. on the way to school pickup or getting out of the city early or whatever the case is, it's hectic.
And I'll presume pedestrians and vulnerable road users are in that category at that time, those places.
I mean, it's probably a fair call. I can't talk to that exactly, but...
I would. I know from pedestrian deaths there are... chances are... that dusk time in the morning, dawn in the morning, and then that time after 6 o'clock or something in the evening are the really times you really want to stay off pedestrian crossings.
Yeah.
And you touched on plans to grow it and what might be happening next year. At the moment there's different filters people can use to chop and dice the data. And what are some of the things you're thinking of doing in the future to enhance that?
Well, what people can do now, as I've said, it's free and available for people to... And that whatever's there now will remain free and accessible. So you can go in, you can filter by your local government area, you can view crash details, you can even draw a polygon, a shape around your school or your street to understand it at a closer level. But what I found since putting this out is that there are local councils across the country that want a deeper level of analysis. So we're going to offer like a professional level tier for either advocates or councils or consultants that want a deeper level of insight, which will include proximity analysis. So if you want to know how many active crashes are around all the schools in your council area, it's maybe a couple of clicks away. It's not in the domain of waiting days or weeks or requiring technical expertise. Yeah. So hotspot analysis, we might have a LGA risk score. We have for the state what the state average is and where your local government area is tracking against that.
Yeah.
And each time we've set up monitors, so each time that crash data gets released, we're reducing the time between it being released and it coming into Crash Dash, so we kind of keep that up to date and update people. So it's a lot of the plans are sort of, in a way, aspirational. I'm going to have a busy summer building these things, but I'm trying to work and have these conversations and understand where are the priorities. The data is extensive and it can be cut up in so many different ways.
Yeah.
But I want to work with councils and community groups to understand what are their top interests so we can prioritise the features.
Faith, what are the traffic management around schools? Is run by the schools and the council? Are they effectively the designers of how they run their drop-off and pick-up times?
It depends. If not, if you're on a state road.
So it changes.
I mean, it's like all the roads. Yeah. You have to, if you want to change the speed limit or put in a pedestrian crossing, or you have to, even if it's a council road, they might intend to do that, but they still have to apply to the DTP for permission.
Yep.
And that permission is much harder to get. Also, it's council can't apply if it's a state road. It has to come from the government, and it's much harder to get. If they see that as an important arterial, then despite all the rhetoric about prioritising pedestrians and vulnerable road users, it takes a long time to get any change. And it can be, we have an example in Marybeck on Murray Road where there's a huge corridor with, I mean, the number of crashes every single week, and it's a very narrow footpath that has to be used by a lot of children to get to a bus stop and to a school and the broader community. And after years of advocacy, you get a school zone speed limit implemented, which, because it's such a small section of the whole corridor, makes zero difference to the speed people are using and does nothing to address the fact that the children coming into that speed zone are walking across the narrow pavement on either side of it. Like, it's, so it's
one thing, but it can feel like such a small thing.
And it's, it's very ineffective in this particular scenario. So it depends. I know, like, Marybeck have now got funding and plans to do more around schools that are doing the Ride and Stride programs where they've got lots and encouraging lots of people to walk and ride to school. But, it's still in that context where everything has to be approved and... Yeah.
Even if it is a local responsibility.
Right?
So the idea of actually having some standardised system for doing this is a fair way away. I get the picture.
Yeah.
Where do you see it going, Anthony? I mean, building it bigger and making... Well, are local councils your biggest go-to people?
I think that's where I'm starting. I've worked a lot with local councils and I've worked previously at the City of Port Phillip years ago before I even did a bike spot project. So I think it's a great place to start because if it works for government and decision makers, then it could work for the broader industry and advocates. Yeah. But ideally, I'd love Crash Dash to be the go-to tool across the country for people to view crash data.
Yeah.
So that's where it's going. And it's, in a way, it's a collective effort. Although I'm doing a lot, I'm trying to get out there and talk to a lot of people and in different states because those jurisdictions handle things differently and the deeper understanding I can get from it, I can share that knowledge as well. Yep. So,
And where can people find Crash Dash?
Yes. Well, you can Google Crash Dash as one word or you can go to crashdash.crowdlab.com.au.
And we will
include it in the podcast.
Yep. We'll put a link into the podcast.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for this week.
Coming up next is...
Shebop.
Love me, say you do.
Been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.